Hirschfield and Kula on KXL.
Welcome back. I'm Brad Hirschfield.
I'm Erwin Kula.
This is Intelligent Talk Radio. So here's the thing, Erwin. The Beatles may be right. Money can't buy us love, but apparently it can buy us an awful lot of happiness. Right, there is a new Pew Global Attitude Survey. They went out and they talked to over 45,000 people in 46 different countries. And it turns out that more people in more places are more satisfied with their lives in the last 5 years. And here's the thing. They also report that their country is advancing, and in many nations, these attitudes are broadly linked with improvements in per capita income over those last 5 years.
Imagine that.
I mean, it's, you know, you get a little richer, you get a little bit happier. Now, and I think it's really important, because with all the stuff out there of happiness is within, and actually it has nothing to do with material stuff, I always, you know, I said, find me a miserable star. Starving, oppressed person who says happiness is purely within. Those arguments tend to come from people who have food in their pot, who have a warm bed to sleep in and clothing on their
and
back.
And don't like to give charity.
Exactly. Yeah, right, because, of course, it's all within, so you don't have to worry
about
taking
Mother
care
Teresa,
of anyone else.
We and I honor Mother Teresa. Even Mother Teresa, apparently she spent a good portion of her time depressed at night, you know?
Right, exactly. So material well-being does have to do with happiness, right? So I got it. It doesn't buy you love.
But it ain't the whole story.
But it does help. And the relationship between rising incomes and increasing happiness is most evident, according to the Pew study, in China, India, Latin America, and Eastern Europe, all places where it's not only growing, but it's a new form of growth. And there's an excitement around that. And not surprisingly, it's weaker in the poorer parts of Asia, like Pakistan, Indonesia, Bangladesh, and unfortunately, most of Africa. So there is something going on about this sense of being able to be more happy when you are more materially better off. Now, it's not the whole story, but it does seem to be a part of the story.
No, but at some point, though, it does stop. And when you look at this stuff, one of the most interesting things is it is related to though, what other people have and expectations. Like, if you have low expectations and you reach them, you're happy. It turns out if when you get, like, enough, one of the problems is your expectations rise exponentially, too, and that can dampen your happiness.
Right. There's no question that the relationship between your satisfaction with what you expect and what we score
right.
as happiness is very complicated. In fact, if you look at the studies, all the studies actually drift in between the language of optimism,
right.
satisfaction, and happiness as if they are all the same thing. And it's not an accident that we're talking about this tonight. Because here we are just a couple of days after Thanksgiving, and it seems to me that after you're done with the uncomfortable exercise of sitting around the table and having to declare to everyone, including relatives you don't really like very much, what it is you're thankful for. And we all get that syrupy sweet voice. I do it too. Right, you lift a glass, and here's what we're thankful for. And it's not that it's unimportant. It's very valuable to do. But it's amazing how 48 hours later, you don't feel so thankful. Unless it turns out that actually there's a relationship between being thankful and being sustained happy in some long-term way, and that it is simply easier to feel that when there are certain fundamental needs that are met, right? In fact, what they saw is that there are certain basics that do have to be met, right? That the Pew study did provide a floor below which it doesn't work, right? The African societies where large segments of the people lack access to water, electricity, and health care.
That's the happiness,
they
eh?
They were miserable. Once you got above that floor, all of a sudden,
other
your aspirations
factors.
And your happiness and other factors started to work in how you scored your happiness quotient. Justin Wolfers is assistant professor of business and public policy at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's the author of a well-known study of happiness, and he's here to help us make sense of Pew and of the Harris poll and all these people running around trying to measure who's happy and why. Professor Wolfers, welcome to the show.
How are you guys?
First of all, are you happy?
Right now, you bet.
Good. Okay.
Oh, good. So we're happy to have you happy.
Good.
I mean, tell us about a little bit about what you found in your study and what you think it's most important to know about understanding the happiness of large populations.
Sure. So it's actually interesting. You guys were just talking about the cross-country evidence on happiness, and it is true that richer countries tend to be happier than poorer countries. The study I recently finished, actually with my partner, Betsy Stevenson, looks at how happiness has moved in the U.S. over the last 40 years. And men have become a little bit happier, but actually, over the last 40 years, women have become significantly less happy. And I think of this as a real puzzle. Again, coming back and thinking about things like income or personal freedoms as the determinants of happiness, by almost any measure, the last few decades have been fantastic for women. The gender pay gap seems to have decreased. Women are going to college in greater numbers. Even if you think about sort of domestic drudgery, that's on the way out as we now have Roombas and dishwashers and all sorts of things to make life a little more comfortable. So we just found this very puzzling to see that American women have become somewhat less happy.
Well, might not that point exactly what we've been talking about, that happiness is not only a function of material wealth, it requires some baseline of material wealth, but is also a function of expectation, and that actually what we've seen over the last 40 years, especially for women, is the range of expectations that are possible to sustain has advanced enormously, and that there's always a delicate balancing act between, as your expectations grow, if those expectations are not met, your happiness can actually go down, even if there's a material increase in your quality of life.
Absolutely. And so I think another way of saying that is it could be that the puzzle in our data is not why are women unhappy today, but why were they so happy in the 70s? Well, in the 70s, these were pretty interesting times for women. Many of them might have felt were on the cusp of a revolution, and everything was about to get a whole heck of a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it did get better, but now that elation has worn off. Or maybe it got a little bit better, but not as much as their expectations.
Yeah, and maybe that first wave, I love the way you say it, on the cusp of the revolution, you know, anyone who's involved in social change and trying to influence things, and you're in the moment, and you can taste different things for the first time, it's like an adrenaline rush, and there is this kind of happiness. But then it's not simply that that stuff doesn't happen anymore, but happiness itself has to become a much richer, nuanced way of thinking about one's life. So rights, which women definitely got, and material gains, which women definitely got, it turns out that to a certain point, it really does make you happy. But there are other levels of happiness that political rights and material gain cannot give you, that have to come from somewhere else.
Well, I'm not sure that I agree with the view that there's certainly more to happiness than money, and so a richer view of the world definitely should be embraced. And remember, this is an economist saying this. I could lose my job for saying that. But if you think about some of the things the women's movement did achieve or occurred through this period, think about the introduction of the pill,
mm-hmm.
the legalization
mm-hmm.
of abortion. Women now, for the first time ever, have control over their fertility, not only when to have children, but whether to have children. That strikes me as being some of those, so they get to choose the family size and type that they want.
I wonder if that's a double-edged sword, because
right.
choice is a funny thing. On the one hand, obviously, the more choice, the better. On the other hand, the more choice, the greater anxiousness regarding choice. And anxiousness probably takes down, you know, a notch of happiness.
Exactly. In other words, Erwin, if you can't, once you know you have a choice, you also have to confront the reality of making the wrong choice.
I always find this an interesting argument, because men in particular are very keen on making it. So one of the things that has happened is women have had an enormous number of new choices, and maybe that's why they're less happy. If we really believe that, then in order for men to become happier, then perhaps we should reduce the number of choices.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Actually, what we need to do is to catch up with something that actually men have had far more than women. And what we do need is more and more choice. But we're going to have to learn that with choice comes a different type of happiness. And I think men actually have a sense of that, because we have had a lot of choices. I think that one of the things that may be happening here is the newness of choices, like my teenager in that way. I have a teenage daughter, and she has she went off to college, tremendous amount of choices, and there is more anxiousness than she had when she was living under my roof in high school. Of course I wanted to have all these choices. I want to have more choices than she even imagines. But we're going to have to recraft what we mean by happy once we understand the anxiousness that comes with choice.
Perhaps. It's an interesting argument. I mean, one of the other great gender shifts over the past few years has, in fact, been college going. On average, 60% of college students today are women, 40% are men. And so you might think that, you know, those broader opportunities to go off to school, and I remember going to school, it was a heck of a lot of fun, would have raised women's happiness. And the reduced opportunities for men to attend college, they're getting competed out of college by women, might have reduced their happiness, but evidently not.
Last question. We're going to have to go to a break here, Professor Wolfers. In all of the studies on happiness, have you learned anything you can share about, is there a way that people can increase their happiness?
So let me go beyond what The Economist could say, and just a piece of wisdom that I once read that I found very valuable, which is when it comes to buying things, we all look forward to it and we all enjoy it, but when we get it, it doesn't do much.
Mm-hmm.
But when we spend money on experiences, we get to live with those memories for a long time, and I think that can be very valuable.
That's beautiful. I think it's a parallel when someone once told me the difference between a want and a need is. If you still enjoy it after you've got it, it's probably a need. If you really are done with it just once you've gotten it, it was probably just a want and you didn't need to pursue it anyway. Justin Wolfers, professor of the Business and Public Policy in the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, author of Studies of Happiness. Look forward to having you back on the show sometime soon. I'm Brad Hirschfield.
I'm Rowan Kula.
We'll be back with more about happiness and what really makes us happy and how to get happier right after this.